Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers, and this is the Love Letter Squad.
And hi, I'm Janet Gallen, and I am the other half of the Love Letter Squad. And each week we come here to bring you stories that are really, well, people's stories that are really interesting, compelling, inspirational. Sometimes we don't know how people get through challenges in life, but we find that they do, and not only do they have it in their hearts to write a love letter to somebody in gratitude and appreciation and encouragement. And today we have something a little bit different for us. Our guest is Catherine Forsyth, who is a sex educator, and her specialty is human sexuality of aging people. And I'll have to ask, we'll have to find out what aging means and how old that is exactly, or is that a state of mind more? And I'm just going to go right to Catherine now and ask you to talk about you a little bit first, how you grew up, where, what your family was like, what your parents were like, what childhood was like in your home, anything that you feel we should know.
I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Detroit. And I had a really warm family. My father was an attorney. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. My mother was very influential in my life because she was very Victorian. Came from the touchless generation and never, ever let on if she in fact loved you, she never told you. I got the message from my father that I was a very important person. My mother, however, was very cold.
Was she cold with him also?
She was a little bit cold with him. I don't know, because it was Victorian. I never saw any affection that went on between the two of them, if in fact
you didn't
it did.
See. Okay.
Yeah. So there wasn't a lot of affection. I think that was kind of a jumping off place for what I do for a living.
I would guess, but yeah. I'm curious about something. So children obviously want to love their parents and do and gravitate towards them. When you would come to her with open arms, what would she do?
Oh, she would hug me back.
Oh, I see. Okay.
She was not... She was not so standoffish that she wouldn't give affection, but she was very interested in maintaining that sort of distinguished noblesse oblige
attitude.
So
it served another purpose for her.
Yeah, it did. She was a very, very smart, very wise woman, very brave, very, very strong.
Brave in what ways?
She was the World War II generation and went to work in World War II when the men were gone, and she was a secretary and went all the way up to vice president at General Motors.
So she was just cool and aloof, not a sissy.
Oh, she was not a sissy. In fact, she had what I call true grit.
I see.
Which is something that I have and my daughters have, and it's really saved us, and especially me in the last 6 years of my life.
And so you know to thank her for that genetically.
I do. I do thank her for that genetically. Anyway, that was how I grew up, and it was very much the Motor City, you know, Detroit in the 60s, big cars, big fins, big money in the automobile industry. General Motors could do no wrong, which apparently they could eventually.
Right.
But in any case, that's how I grew up.
And do you want to tell us what your path to this profession that you have is now? And
yeah, I think there
what
were...
What sparked your...
Yeah, I think there were several things that sparked my interest.
I'm sorry, was sex something that was also not talked about at home?
It was talked about in this message. Don't get pregnant or it will ruin your father's reputation in the community.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay, so that doesn't exactly let you know how you do get pregnant.
No, it didn't let
and
you
the
know
joys
how you
of
do get
the,
pregnant. I was blessed to have a junior high swim coach. I was a champion swimmer, and I had a swim coach who was generous and loving, and she sat me down and pretty much explained to me what was going on and what to watch for, what not to watch for.
In your own body growth?
In my own body growth, in my own sexual experiences that were going to be coming up in high school and did
so
in
she,
fact.
So she actually explained to you the mechanics? I mean, what went
she
where?
She explained the mechanics and she explained the emotional ramifications.
Okay, good.
And she was very clear on saying to me something that I have taught when I've taught teenagers in years before, which is, if you're going to engage in adult activities, remember you've got to take adult, you've got to play by adult rules.
Good.
Which means, what she said to me was, you must at all times understand that you can get pregnant. Even in those days, which was the 60s, you can get STIs, sexually transmitted infections. Make sure that you know that when you have
Well, you could always get syphilis and gonorrhea.
Syphilis and gonorrhea, right. Yeah. The Egyptians had that, I think.
Exactly.
Syphilis is because of penicillin and because of antibiotics, it's not as prevalent as it used to be. Gonorrhea, however,
is resistant.
It's resistant, and today is back in epidemic proportions, right. And people don't realize it.
And resistant to drugs. That's important.
It is resistant to drugs. Yeah. Somewhat resistant, right. Yeah. It's very difficult. Once you get it, you got it.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. So
anyway, she was very instrumental in teaching me and helpful. But I think what set me off on this path was my dear friend in high school. We were double dating and went to her boyfriend's house and we were sitting on the couch, and she and her boyfriend toddled off to the bedroom. And about 10 minutes later, she came out giggling. Ha ha. The rubber broke. I said, Dawn, that's not funny. Well, she became pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. The abortion was botched. She did not lose the pregnancy.
Oh, my.
And she went through a horrible pregnancy, almost died, and then almost died again giving birth. Her boyfriend, of course, left her.
Oh.
So it was, for me, a pivotal moment.
Wait, so what happened to the baby?
The baby lived. The baby is now, I think, 30-something years old.
And healthy and all?
And healthy, yeah. But she almost lost her life twice. She did keep the baby. She kept the baby, and actually, eventually, her high school boyfriend came back to her and stayed with her as the father of the child for probably 5 years, and then, you know, they were too young. It just wasn't going to work. So Dawn was on her own. But in any case, that really charged me up to say, I don't ever want to see this happen again with anyone. So that was my life's work, and there were other events in my life that...
Okay, but you were in high school here, you say.
I was in high school and then in college. She, in fact, had a full-ride scholarship to Michigan State, couldn't take it. I went on to go to the University of Michigan, and I always felt badly that she couldn't go to college, so I spent my time working at Planned Parenthood to help other women, and I took all the courses I could in human sexuality, and then eventually got a master's in social work with a specialty in human sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the influence of that episode of my life so strongly coming down on me that really changed everything.
And so, I'm sorry,
I was going to ask you, well, what is the work that you do today?
Okay, the work I do today is gravitated. When I was younger, I taught teenagers. Now that I'm in the group that I teach, I never realized I'd actually get to be this age, but in any case, I'm well into the age that I teach, which is 50, 55 plus, midlife plus, boomers plus. I do work both with boomers and the 50s, 60s. I also work with older adults who are 70, 80s, 90s, even over 100. People are still having sex, folks. It's a myth that you can't. So my passion is to bring the joy of human sexuality, which is not just sex, but it's the warmth, it's the loving, it's the touch, it's the understanding, it's the intimacy, bringing that back into people's lives. Because there used to be, and there still is in some cases, when you checked into a skilled living facility or a skilled nursing facility, assisted living, you pretty much checked your sexuality at the door.
I remember reading about that a lot, and the supposition was what?
Well, you can't.
It was also considered kind of scandalous.
Old people don't do that.
Oh, and that dirty old man concept.
Yeah, right.
Mean.
Exactly. Dirty old man, and women don't have sexuality at that age. That was the myth. Women don't have sexuality. Men are dirty, always want sex, or basically that old people don't do that.
Right.
And it's very intimidating for the staff.
But old people were doing it. They were kind of sneaking around and doing it.
They were and are.
Yeah.
And with the tsunami of boomers coming in, the love child generation, we're going to have, somebody's going to have to address it. So it's me. I'm addressing it, and
What is the issue? What's the trouble people have with picturing older people being sexually involved with each other?
Well, where does we look around at our magazines,
our
media, our internet, there aren't a lot of old people featured as sexual. You know,
because they're not as pretty to look at?
Probably. I mean, why do we have a youth culture? I don't know. We have a youth culture because we have a youth culture, but it is very, there's a bias. So my job is to not only educate these folks, but really to educate the staff on what happens as people age, and understanding that we are born sexual beings, we die sexual beings, and it's a basic need to be touched, to be loved. Mm-hmm. Another pivotal moment in my life was, I was probably 13. Actually, this was pre my friend who had the baby situation. My grandmother was in a nursing home, and she had dementia, and she was reaching out, literally with her arms, reaching out to be touched. Mm-hmm. And instead of touching her, the staff bought her a big, overstuffed doll.
Oh.
And gave it to her.
Oh.
And wrote her name on the back of the doll so that should it fall out of her bed, they would know who it belonged to.
How incredibly creepy.
Yeah, it was creepy, and it was sad. And I remember as a young girl going to visit her and seeing this doll and thinking, oh, she wants to be hugged, and hugging her and having her cry and cry and cry. So all those things happen.
But so you're talking also about the need to be touched and held and stroked as sexual and outside of sexual.
Yeah.
Not just sexual, but I mean for somebody who just wants to be hugged and touched, not just be a sexual desire.
Well, it's in the field.
Oh, okay. Go
in
ahead.
The business.
Yes.
We refer to sexuality as it has five components.
Oh,
and
go
that
ahead.
Is the history that you come with, your life wisdom. And for these folks, they have an amazing amount of history and wisdom that they've brought, older folks. You know, their educational background, their spiritual background, their cultural values, the experiences they've had in life. They bring them with them to mm-hmm. these facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Those don't leave. And so if you've come from a culture of being touched and being loved and being held, and suddenly you're in a facility, it's really scary. So that's one thing, life wisdom. The second thing is, in part of your sexuality is intimacy, which is the need to be close to someone, a good friend, have that good friend. And so many of these people are isolated, don't have that. The third thing is sensuality, which is what you're talking about,
right.
And that is the need to be touched and to use all five of your senses,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be able to see things that are pleasing to you and to be able to smell things that are pleasing to you. In a facility, you don't get to smell things like bread baking and the turkey cooking.
Oh,
you don't get
yes.
that. So it's a need, as well as being touched. And then, there's the physical sexuality, which is the act of actually physically being intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a lot of fun. And a lot of people don't want to give it up. And so they're sneaking off into rooms. Now, I must say that there's a lot of really with it communities now
yes.
that are creating situations where people can be intimate and can be loving. So there's hope for all of us, and it's really exciting. And then another piece of it is reproductive health. And that is, people at this age group cannot talk to their doctors. You know,
Why?
Doctors don't want to talk about it. I used to teach doctors human sexuality, and when we would get to the chapter on, excuse me, sex and aging, these docs pretty much, ew.
No.
Yeah, seriously. I remember.
Wait a minute, they're not supposed to say that about anything.
No, they're not, but they do.
Funny.
And so what we do is we say refer. Make sure you can refer. If you can't deal with someone's sexuality, make sure you refer to a doctor who can. For example, I was just with a man last week who is very worried about his ED, which stands for erectile dysfunction. And he went to the doctor, and he said, you know, I think about this a lot, doctor. Will you help me? What should I do? And the doctor said, well, you have two choices. You can take the blue pill or you can take a cold shower. That was it, the blue pill being Viagra.
Uh-huh.
And no discussion about it.
And it's so heartless.
It's so heartless. And the reality is, for most men in this age group, that particular condition is not dictated by physical. It's dictated by emotional. So it can be overcome without drugs. They just need a little help. So educating the staff on how to talk to people mm-hmm. about it. Anyway, that's what I do, and I'm passionate about it.
I can see that. I know. This is, again, should be a television moment so we could see your face. But so you must have people who are grateful to you.
I think I do.
Yes.
Some of them have passed on. Some of them are still around and are now married within the community. So that's very exciting. And I really, you know, I'm actually a pioneer in this. I'm pushing this forward. There's a lot of people who talk about sexuality, but not a lot of people who talk about
sexuality. So will you talk to people individually or couples individually?
I work with people individually, but mostly what I do is do seminars for staff and for administration, and then for the family, so they understand when mom falls in love again, how to handle that, particularly if mom has dementia, because mom may not know that the person that she's intimately involved with is not her husband. So they have to explain, we have to explain to the family all about that, and then the big case of that was Sandra Day O'Connor, and when she was a Supreme Court justice, and she left the bench because her husband John had Alzheimer's, and actually, about a year after she left the bench, he became so sick with Alzheimer's that she put him into a facility. Mm-hmm. The first day she went to see him, he did not recognize her, and in fact, he said, I don't think I know you, but I'd like you to meet my girlfriend.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so she's been instrumental.
So she was mature enough.
Oh, she was. She said, I'm so happy that he's happy. Oh. And I will do everything I can to support him.
I could just cry.
Yeah. It's a very moving thing, but this happens a lot. Yeah. And so educating the family around that this person is not going to eventually recognize the true spouse.
Yes.
And being gentle with that and allowing them to have the joy of holding hands, of cuddling with someone else.
I have a friend who fell in love with a wonderful man and got married. She was 87, and it was a wonderful, romantic, wonderful time, and the wedding was at her daughter's house, and They just had a wonder. She died recently. She died a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
At 96, but you know there was not even a question that this was a really wonderful romance.
Well, it increases longevity, so
that's
the biggest selling point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, reduces heart rate, everything.
Would you say, because when you said increases longevity, there is that issue of children who are not touched in orphanages who perish.
Yeah, there's a big study about that.
Uh-huh.
It's the classic study now.
Yes, that
and the
children who are not touched they just shrink away and die.
Exactly, and they just put dolls in there with them. And
we're, that didn't help, I think. It was when the nurses...
No, it was only when the nurses touched them, that's correct.
And so touching from womb to tomb is critical.
It isn't.
It's
That's very critical. It's very critical. And allowing yourself to be sexual too is critical. And whatever that means to an individual, and if people interpret it differently, but allowing themselves to be fully a man or a woman. And if you don't think, or anybody thinks that goes away, all you have to do is go to a retirement community or skilled nursing or assisted living and watch the Saturday night parties. If you don't think people get dressed up with their best makeup looking beautiful, you must look again, because people are men
or
women.
Or listening. I had a friend who was living at she also died a year ago at the age of 96. And to listen to the women talking at lunch, and these were women in their 90s, and they were talking about men and which ones were available and which ones, yes, all along.
Yeah,
like they were in high school. The conversations were the same.
That's amazing, right?
Okay.
So anyway, I am.
So let us ask.
Yes.
Who, with all that your life has been?
Yeah.
I see that you've brought love letters.
I do. I have two. I have.
Why don't you tell us why you got those, and then just read them to us?
Okay.
Found letters
love
are wonderful.
To do that.
Okay.
The background of this is that in order for me to do this business that I do, it's taking a lot of courage and a lot of encouragement. And I moved here to San Francisco, left everything I had. I got divorced several years ago, sold everything I owned, moved west, and started my new life over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't have done it without my mother's encouragement, though she was long dead, and my daughter's encouragement, who really took on the role for me of almost a mother and told me that they loved me and encouraged me. So
may we start with the one from your mother?
Yeah, I would like to.
Because you said she's long dead, and our point so often is people keep these forever.
Yeah, I do.
And you can't speak from the grave, but you can send it on ahead, and when people need that encouragement, they can pick this letter up forever and read it.
Yeah.
Is that what
you... That's exactly what happened. In fact, when I knew I was going to do this, I got this letter out and spent last night most of the evening crying and reading it again. But this is the letter in which my mother, just before she died of cancer, told me finally that she loved me.
Oh, my.
And it's a letter that I will cherish forever, and if my house burns down, you know, it's that one thing I'll grab and take with me. But in any case, she was, just so you know the background, she was dying of cancer, and she wrote me this letter on my birthday, and this is the letter.
Okay.
Dear Kat, all of a sudden, it's only 3 days until your birthday, and I hope this reaches you in time to wish you a lovely day. What you have made of your life and the lives of those around you is truly amazes me. Where you get the energy to give unstintingly to your daughters and your children, your career and your husband is a mystery to me. But I was particularly impressed by the fact that yours is a family that enjoys each other. What a wonderful way to live. Well, back to the birthday. On the 21st of April, 1948, at New Grace Hospital in Detroit, Michigan, I sat on the edge of my hospital bed watching out the window as your father drove into the hospital entrance. You were not even 24 hours old, and I was already tired. But I remember thinking, what a wonderful world. There I was with my darling baby girl, my loving husband on his way to see me, and my two little boys at home who would be so excited. What a joy you were then, and you still are. All my love and happy birthday, Mother. P.S. I forgot to say the most important part. Oh. I love you dearly. You are my alter ego. A mother needs a daughter. Love, Mother. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Really
so that's something I will take with me forever.
Well, I'm reaching for my Kleenex.
And,
me too. And but she even said she knew from the moment you were born.
Yeah, and she couldn't say it. It was that whole generation. It's the touchless generation. They weren't allowed to say it. But she did, and I took that with me. The flip side of that now is when I went through this big change in my life and sold everything, left everybody I knew, moved out to San Francisco to follow my dream, which was to build this business around human sexuality, which is my true passion. My daughters stood behind me, and I want to read what they said. This is my daughter Kate, who lives in New York City. To my beautiful and talented mom, happy birthday. I'm so delighted to have your genes, if only it means I look so good at 60.
Oh, good.
But I want to take this opportunity to say how proud I am and how excited for what lies ahead of you. Your bravery and refusal to settle is an inspiration. Can't wait to watch you take off and soar. I believe in you. Love, Kate.
Wonderful. You've got one more.
And I've got one more.
Then I have a question for you if we have time.
Okay, and this is from my daughter Beth, who is in Austin, Texas. And I just on the outside of the card is a picture of a man on roller skates holding scissors open.
Yes.
And it says, "Wee," and the caption underneath it is, "It's amazing you've made it this far." That's the caption.
Mm-hmm.
So here's her note. There aren't many people in the world who can say their mom is, quote, roller skate with scissors, unquote, brave. Someone who drops everything and moves west to start a new life. There also aren't a lot of people who talk girl talk like we do, or who enjoy a night out together like we do, or actually work together to try again to fit the fitted sheet over the memory foam. I'm so lucky you're my mom. Here's to another year of tackling new projects, facing life head on, and laughing loud and often. Love, Beth.
Beautiful.
My cheerleaders.
That's great. Gorgeous. Now I have a question. Do I have time for a question?
Yes.
Okay. So that is just, as far as we're concerned, for Love Letters Live, that is just certainly perfect. Good enough. Who could ask for anything more for
Thank
us?
Thank you.
But what we want people to hear about. But I have a question for you. As far as a love letter from you goes, and I don't know if you have time for this or you would want to do it, but I see a couple of love letters as I'm listening, just because that's what I do. And one would be to your mother.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Even though she's gone. And really telling her everything that you said here, how you remembered your childhood, that you knew, you know, her bravery and her intelligence and
yeah.
her wisdom. And I don't know if you ever got to tell her that while you were growing up.
I had a brief moment before she died
nice.
That right after this letter was written that...
But
I did.
The point of writing, I think, a letter to a parent who has passed on, in addition to you get to bathe in the positive,
yeah,
and it's just a glorious feeling,
yeah,
is you can write it to her and say, I'm writing this to you, dear mom, but I'm sending it to my daughters because I want them to know whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then we had one woman on our show, and she wrote to her mother. She was 70. She wrote a letter to her mother to catch her up on her life. Her mother had been long gone. And she started out, and every time I say this, I just blubber. Oh. It was, Dear Mom, this is Carol. I'm 70 now, and I just lost it.
Aww.
The whole thought of that, you know, bringing her mother up to date. And her anyway, and mailing it to your children.
It's a great idea.
Grandchildren will find it someday.
Yes.
And know that their pedigree is one of, I came from love.
Oh, that's wonderful, yeah.
So, and then what about the woman, your girlfriend in high school? Is she still with us?
You know, I don't know. I've lost track of her.
Yeah.
I'm sure she is someplace.
Because I can see one to her saying,
yeah, that would be fabulous.
I'm 60 now,
idea.
And here's what I'm doing, and I know it's because of you.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
If you could
that's
find
a great
her.
Idea. I actually did see her ex-boyfriend at one of our last
reunions. I'd like to write
reunions.
Her a letter.
Yeah, and yeah. We talked about it, and he's lost track of her, too. So
Google is fabulous. Just
you're right.
And yes. Facebook.
Yeah,
see what you can do.
Google, Facebook,
yes,
absolutely.
I found so many people. But don't you think she would just be
I think she would
stunned,
be thrilled.
Love stunned to
I
get a letter
I think she would
like
be love
that?
Stunned.
And how about
I do.
That junior high school swim coach?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes, she would be wonderful, too. I've often thought I would try and look her up because she changed my life, literally.
Oh, good. So maybe you could look her up after you've written this letter.
Yes.
And say you changed my
life. I would
life
definitely do that.
I'm a star and a pioneer because of you, partly.
It is true because of her. She used to say to me, you're the greatest. You can do whatever you want to do. Don't ever give up, ever.
Oh, well then, a thank you note would be just perfect about now.
Oh, totally, totally, totally.
Okay, thank you so much for
thank you. This has
telling
been inspirational
us all this
to me.
And
wonderful.
Thank you.
And just, you know, all that you've done is wonderful to know. It's nice for more people to know about elder sexuality.
Yeah.
And
what that means.
That's what I mean, yes. Yeah. And that somebody is cheering them on. And I guess people have to be told, well, they don't care what you think, but it's nice to know that they're doing it with the world's blessings.
Yeah.
And that they're still seeing as vital enough to do it, that they're not being discarded as,
They're being affirmed. They're being affirmed
exactly.
as sexual, wonderful people till the day they die.
So that's all wonderful to know.
Yeah.
And then all these letters that are possible to change lives, and we say, a good love letter says hello, a great love letter changes lives.
Yes, that's true.
This one from your mother, for example, that lets you know, finally, what she's been wanting to tell you all her life and couldn't.
That's right.
And I bet that changed the last part of her life to be able to say it.
I think it probably did. It probably did. I saw a huge change in those last few days.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So this letter that she wrote to you, how long did she live after she wrote this?
This was 95, and she died about maybe 13 months later.
Okay.
So we had some time to bask in the glory of that and had some really wonderful conversations that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So it took a lot of courage for her to write that note, to break out of the mold.
Yes, and by the way, you know, when to say something about love letters, they're not always easy to write. No. You can't sit down and just do it. It takes bravery and kindness. And more bravery.
Yeah, it sure does. True grit, as I call
it. Yes, exactly.
And that's what my mother gave
thank
me.
Thank you, dear.
Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we have just time to sign off. And I want to say to our listeners, if you have someone who changed your life in some way, think about writing a love letter to that person, whether they're living or dead, or whether you even think you can find them or not.
Yes.
And do that while you still have the chance.
Yes. And why take gratitude to your grave?
Right.
I'm sure there's no space for it in the afterlife
right.
just to stuff it under and take it. You might as well spill it and leave it behind you.
Right. So till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.